Welcome to this God-inspired message from Shofar Christian Church. Enjoy today's message. May you experience the presence of our Father, and may you grow deeper in your relationship with Him.
You know, the amazing thing as I was praying and preparing for the sermon, this message today, and perhaps more so for this morning, but I just sense that there's a stirring of the same for us this evening. As I was preparing, I realized, you know, some of us, we go through life sometimes. Sometimes life happens to us. Many of us know Marinae. She's not here tonight, is she? Marinae, who was taken up in hospital on Friday night because she was attacked, and needed some surgery to her arm. Carissa, who was here this morning, is trying to organize a wedding in Harare next month. She's just hoping that everything turns out and stays and remains peaceful. For me personally, this last week was just incredibly emotional. Good friends of mine, many of you have been around in church for a while, would know Hanre and Mezen, and they, those of you who are visiting, I think most in church probably know about it. They were in church with us for many years, stay in Polokwane now. And their two-year-old fell into a swimming pool on Tuesday morning and drowned, on Tuesday afternoon, and drowned. And fortunately, the medics were able to resuscitate after half an hour or so of resuscitation. And the whole journey, just the up and down of the emotional turmoil that one's confronted with that, and then they send the helicopter to fetch the kid and to bring the kid to a hospital down here in Joburg, and just up and down. Then it's an amazing thing for any of you who's ever been involved in a trauma situation like this. I remember the first time that I was confronted with a moment like this was when I was in matric, and my brother had been at a party, and I was out with some friends. Got home late that night and had my own key to home. Got home and there was no one at home, which is a little bit weird because my young brother would normally have been home before me, and my mom was always at home probably praying for us. She knew she needed to. And the phone rang. Not a phone like this. I was taking Mika, Hanre Mezen, whose son had the accident, their elder sister, to Joburg the other day, and she just talking and saying what she's up to. And she said, no, she likes playing games on her phone now. She turns to me and she says, did you also like playing games on your phone when you were a kid? And I had to try and explain to her that, you know, when I was a kid, these things, they didn't exist. She was like, what do you mean? And I remember the phone rang that evening. Picked up the phone, like 12:30 at night or whatever it is, which is a really weird time for a phone to ring. Answered the phone, and it was my mom. She was at a hospital trauma unit, and my brother at his party had decided he wanted to try a party trick, and he jumped into a swimming pool and he hit his head on the bottom and broke his neck. I phoned my friend who I'd just come from, so I put the phone down. I'm like, okay, so what do I do now? Phoned my friend on his phone. You guys from the older people with the young people, students, you don't remember this. You used to know people's telephone numbers. You could pick up the phone and just dial the number. You didn't have to go look it up anyway. So I put it on the phone, I picked up the phone, and I dialed my friend's number. Stayed a couple of blocks away from me, and he came jogging to my house and rang the doorbell. And I got to the door, and I couldn't open the door. It's not that I didn't want to open the door. I literally couldn't get the key into the keyhole because of the way I was shaking. And I don't know why I'm telling you this, but anyway, so I opened the door, and he came in, and he had a backpack. And in his backpack had 10 or 15 or whatever VHS cassette tapes. Do you guys remember those things? Those are Netflix days of DVD or Blu-ray. So he rocked, and he was then, I was lying on the couch the whole evening just watching recorded TV shows, because that's what you would do back then. You'd record TV shows with the ads in between as well. You'd fast-forward the ads on the VHS player. He slept on the couch. And when I realized sort of in my brother's recovery, and the great thing is one of the first things that happened, it was the neurosurgeon who worked with my brother. He came out just after my brother had his first scans, and he introduced himself to my mom. He said, "So you Mrs. Bossoff?" My mom said, "Yes." He said, "I'm sorry to tell you, your son's a quadriplegic for the rest of his life." Mom looked at the neurosurgeon and said, I wasn't there, so I don't know exact words, but something along the lines of, "Thank you very much, but I believe in Jesus." The great thing is my brother, 3 months later, walked out of the hospital. He ended up spending three or four years working on a ship. My brother's never totally normal. So my brother's like 99.5% normal or whatever. And you can't feel heat in certain parts of his body because of the nerve damage that he did pick up, which is really good for him because he lives in Canada now. So he can just walk around and doesn't realize that it's minus 40 degrees outside. But apart from that, a trauma. And one of the challenges about big moments of trauma like that, my brother was, as I said, he's like close to 100% healed, as normal as a brother can be. And one of the things I learned back then is you have these long episodes of darkness and despair interjected with little moments of hope. Little moments of it's going to be okay. And then these long moments of darkness of it's not going to be okay. It doesn't look good. Nothing is working. And then the little moment. And you learn to hold on to that little moment. Just in this week for me with this little baby, Azile, it's the same story. It's little moments. And then just as you think it's going well, the doctor arrives. It's that thing which we're worried about, that's going better. But there's all this other stuff that's making the baby die. And, you know, this doctor that they ended up with happens to be a specialist in this area. He's done over 400 baby drownings, which is crazy. Don't let your kid drown. It's not a good idea. Not that anyone ever does it on purpose, but I never realized 400 kids drown just at this come to this hospital. It's crazy how regularly, in a sense, it happens. So I was reading up a little bit about this doctor because he's done some famous patients and famous cases. And one person wrote so well. He says, the doctor is brilliant, but he's got no bedside manners. And he just shares just the brokenness. And the reality is, you know, when you're faced with a situation like that, those of us who aren't parents, it's a little bit hard, maybe, perhaps, our heart goes out and we realize this is bad, but something's different when you're a parent and you picture your little baby lying there. But those moments in life where life happens. These are, for those of you who don't know them, two of the most godly people I know. I don't know far more than I am. People who pray and seek God's face, give away everything they have. They had a beautiful house just around the corner from mine, twice my house's size, twice the garden. They sold it, and all of the profit they made out of it, they used to go and help plant a church in Utrecht. People who've given their lives for the kingdom, and then a moment like this happens, through no fault of their own. You're confronted with these questions about what do I do when life happens? Sometimes we think that coming to Jesus, making a decision to follow Jesus, is like getting an injection. You know, vaccinations, apparently they don't work or cause autism or whatever. Fortunately, my kids have vaccines and none of them are autistic. And some of us think that coming to Jesus is like getting a vaccination against bad things happening in life. And then life happens and we find ourselves, okay, well, what now? What happens to our faith? What do we keep doing? We end up in a hospital bed, or someone we love ends up in a hospital bed or worse, and we're confronted with these questions about but how, but what? And it's so great to have friends like these friends, be able to speak to them, pray with them, and see how much they just continue to hold on to God because they know that He is good. And I want us to read from Psalm 37 this evening. I'll get to the verses on the screen now. I just want to read these first couple of verses because it's just such a beautiful passage. I want to encourage you, if you can, go home to spend some time reading Psalm 37. And if we're reading it in Hebrew, which we won't because I can't read Hebrew and you can't understand Hebrew, we'd notice that an acrostic poem. So every phrase or every passage, every little stanza starts with the next letter in the Hebrew alphabet. So if it was translated like in a really, really gifted way, the first word would start with an A. And then a couple of lines later, the next passage would start with a B, and then with a C, and then with a D. And that's why you'll notice there are 22 stanzas in this passage. One for every letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Beautiful piece of poetry. Don't worry about the wicked or envy those who do wrong. Isn't that such a powerful word for where we are in South Africa right now? Some of us missed that. I'm going to read that again. It's not on the screens, I don't think. Don't worry about the wicked or envy those who do wrong. I'm not saying don't be aware of it. I'm not saying don't pray into it. I'm not saying don't be socially alert. But don't worry. Don't let it steal the peace and the joy that you or I are meant to walk with. For like grass, they soon fade away. Like spring flowers, they soon wither. Trust in the Lord and do good. Then you will live safely in the land and prosper. We'll see in a few moments that safely doesn't mean that nothing's ever going to go wrong. That safely doesn't mean that hardships won't befall us. Take delight in the Lord and he will give you your heart's desires. Many of us probably know that one, Psalm 37, verse 4. Delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. And he carries on. Commit everything you do to the Lord. Trust him. He will help you. He will make your innocence radiate like the dawn, and the justice of your cause will shine like the noonday sun. So it carries on, and I want to encourage you to go and read it, but I want us to jump all the way to verse 23. The Lord directs the steps of the godly. He delights in every detail of their lives. The godly, the word there that's used here, it doesn't mean somebody who's only doing good things all the time. See, godliness or righteousness, depending on the translation that you are reading from, has got, in a Christian sense, very little to do with who I am. I'm a godly person, but I'm not a godly person because of my actions or a righteous person because of my actions, because of my conduct. See, as a Christian, the only way we can be righteous, the only reason we are righteous is because Jesus, the Bible teaches us, has become my righteousness. What does that mean? It means that I cannot stand before God sinless. It means I cannot stand before God without guilt. I am as guilty as anybody else on this planet when I stand before Jesus. And yet Jesus, who was totally 100% innocent, carried my guilt upon his shoulders when he died on the cross. And the crazy thing that happened there was this great exchange that happened, where he took my sinfulness and he gave me his righteousness. So when the Bible here speaks about godly, it doesn't speak about my actions as much as it talks about Christ's actions. It doesn't talk about what I'm doing or what I haven't doing as much as it talks about the fact that if I am in Christ, if I have put my faith in Jesus, I become the righteous, I become the godly. The Lord directs the steps of the godly. He delights in every detail of their lives. Perhaps that's hard for us to remember. Perhaps that sometimes we find ourselves in situations and there's this small little detail that for us is so important. And we think to the people around us, you know, 100 men and their baby, we don't know if the baby's going to live, but by faith the baby is going to live. And I just don't know where I'm going to stay next week. I'm looking for a place to stay for next year. I'm not sure which job offer I need to take. I don't have a job offer. I'm busy failing my exams. I don't know what's the next step that I need to take. And the great thing about this is that there is nothing too big or too small for the God we serve. He delights in every detail of your life. I want to encourage you with that. God delights. Some of us need to hear that a bit this evening. God delights in every single detail of your life. Though they stumble, that's the godly, they're there here. Though those godly stumble, they will never fall. For the Lord holds them by the hand. Once I was young, hopefully I still am, and now I am old. Yet I have never seen the godly abandoned, or children, or their children, begging for food. One of the things that I want to encourage us with this evening, one of the things that I want to stir in our hearts just a little bit this evening, is if you are godly in Christ, if you've committed your life to Him and you're following Jesus, the one promise that He gives you, the one thing that David writes, David says he has seen many things in his heart, many things through the course of his life, but one thing that he has never ever seen is the godly abandoned. Whatever we find ourselves in, whatever situation we find ourselves, so amazing for me, just the message I got just as the service started, or sitting at the hospital yesterday when the doctor came and gave this really bad medical facts, put them on the table. So great to be able to step back and see people who know that their strength is in God. But I don't need to as much encourage them. I don't need to be preaching to them or whatever. I'm crying just as much as they are. Just sitting there with them, and they stand up and they say, but God is my strength. But God is my hope. That in the midst of these incredibly trying circumstances, they know that they have not been abandoned. I want us to read a passage, an account of three men who experienced this in a really practical way. Many of us know the story, and I just want to read it to us again by way of encouragement. Hopefully for some of us, maybe going through something right now, this will stir hope in my heart to say, I can hold on. I don't have to give up because Jesus isn't giving up. Maybe for some of us, we're going to park it back in the bank of our mind, and 3 weeks, 3 months, 30 years from now, the moment is going to happen and these words are going to spring forth and you're going to remember. But never have I seen the righteous abandoned. Never have I seen the godly abandoned. Never have I seen the righteous forsaken, depending on the translation that you used. And these guys in Daniel chapter 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they had different names originally, and they came to live in a nation under Babylonian rule. They were Hebrews, Jews, and there was a king, Nebuchadnezzar, and he was a bit of a very ungodly guy. And you know, if you invade a foreign country and you want to rule over a foreign country, there's a couple of ways, I guess, that you can exert rule. One of them is you can throw away all of their leaders and put your leaders, and just force everyone to have to listen to your leaders. And that's sort of the hard way. The easier way, the more diplomatic way, is if you can get some of their leaders into your leadership structure. It just makes it a bit more palatable for those that you are now leading. And that's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar did. So he brought some Jewish leaders into his leadership, into his court, into his decision-making process. Obviously, they weren't rulers. They weren't making the final decisions, except later on Daniel did. And then these three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, three young men passionate about Jesus, three young men committed to following him. And this king, because this is what ungodly kings tend to do, makes himself a really big statue of himself. Because who else are you going to make a statue of than yourself? So he makes this huge statue, and he sends out this national decree that there is going to be this band playing with like a whole bunch of instruments. They're going to make a loud noise. They're going to play the best songs ever. And every time they do that, they're going to start doing exactly what every one of us do when the music comes on in our CD players. We start worshiping the devil. We don't do that, do we? We listen to nice music that is godly and uplifting and really isn't carnal and filled with sex and power and myself at all. We don't listen to music like that because we're Christians. And when this music plays, what we're going to do is we're going to fall on our knees and we're going to worship this big statue. And these three guys are thinking, well, that's all good and well, except God said in the first commandment, I am the Lord your God. You will not have any other gods before me. So they're like, no. Looking at each other, no, no. We're not going to do that. So the music plays. Everyone falls on their knees, starts worshiping this big statue, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are still standing, which is not the best thing to do if you care about your life. They hear about this story. Some people hear about this. Some people don't always like the Jews. People don't always like righteous people. Have you guys noticed that? It's amazing how when you just stand up for what is right, suddenly people don't like you. Suddenly people find a whole bunch of reasons to insult you when all you've done is you've chosen to do what is right. Isn't that weird about life? But they do. When we don't choose to go the way of the world. So these guys who heard that or saw that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're not bending down. They're not bowing down when the music starts playing. They're not singing along with the world to all of these worldly songs. They're holding true to their faith. I think this is a great way to get rid of these Jews. We didn't like them anyway. And they go and they tell King Nebuchadnezzar. And that's where we pick up the story in verse 13. Nebuchadnezzar flew into a rage and ordered that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought before him. When they were brought in, Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you refuse to serve my gods or to worship the gold statue I have set up?" Is it true? I want to encourage us. Those are such important words in all of our lives. You're going to see Nebuchadnezzar, he is a very self-indulgent man, full of himself, thinks he is God's greatest gift to mankind ever, but he's a reasonable man as well. But it's amazing how often we go in two directions in our life when crisis happens. One is we follow the herd mentality. Somebody says something and we just run after that without even stopping and ask it, is it true? I can give you a classic example. Many of us on social media and Facebook, and there's this phenomenon called fake news. You know, there wouldn't be any fake news if you and I just asked, is it true, before we share it. It's amazing how often I see really intelligent people sharing the biggest bunch of nonsense from the weirdest websites, and I'm like, did you even just consider that this might not be true? And then I remember that Abraham Lincoln said, everything you read on the internet is true. So they believe it because Abraham Lincoln said that if it's on the internet, it must be true. But it's weird how if we were just to stop and ask, is it true? How sometimes the course of a decision making may be very different. Can I just remind you that there is a big, massive media machine out in the world who wants you to think and believe and act in a certain way. A large part of what that media machine wants you to think, act in a certain way about is firstly giving you their money, but secondly, it's about giving you their souls. And it's in contrast, direct contrast and contradiction to what Jesus would have us do. We need to be aware of that when we're watching TV shows. We need to be aware of that when we're listening to news. We need to be aware of that when we're listening to music. We need to ask ourselves, what is the spirit? Where is this thing driving me? We need to listen to that when we hear politicians stand up and speak about, they wouldn't call it this, but identity politics. You know what identity politics is all about? I make a political choice based on my identity. In other words, the color of my skin decides my politics. I thank Jesus that he delivered me from that. My color of my skin does not determine my politics. My allegiance to Jesus does. And then black and white, green and purple becomes totally irrelevant. Then it's not a question of, is it a black guy saying it or is it a white guy saying it? Then there's a large question that I first ask, but is it true? It's amazing how much political clout and momentum gets gathered and no one is just stopping and saying, but is it true? Sometimes we just run after the herd. You know, the other thing that we often find ourselves in is we run after the fake news because it doesn't always masquerade as fake. None of us would believe fakeness if we knew it was fake. So, you know, when the devil comes to Eve, he doesn't say, oh, by the way, I'm lying to you. That's not how he works. He makes it sound like truth. Such a powerful question. Is it true? And you know, the flip side is sometimes we're not willing to confront the truth in our own lives. Sometimes we don't want the doctor to come and sit to us and say, listen, this is the medical truth about where your child is at right now. This is the medical truth about where your heart is at. This is the medical truth about where your studies are at. This is the truth about where your career is at. This is the truth about where your relationship is at. This is the truth about where your finances are at. Sometimes we don't like the truth. So we run after the fake news, number one. But sometimes we don't like the truth because of what it reveals about who we are. But this king comes and at least he asks the right question to start with. Is it true? Is it true that you refuse to serve my gods? I'm going to give you one more chance to bow down and worship the statue I have made when you hear the sound of the musical instruments. But if you refuse, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. And then, I love this question. I want more people to ask me this question in my life. What God will be able to rescue you from my power? I love that question. I love when people ask me that question, because the very moment that happens, I know this game has just changed. Up to now, this was beef between you and me. But you know what? You have just invited God to show himself strong on my behalf. What God? Is that really the question you want? I'll show you what God. And I love Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I see their answer. They didn't even wait. The king gives them another chance. They didn't even want another chance. They just answer, I think, with a smile. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need another chance." No, but they don't even get another chance. "We don't need to defend ourselves before you. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us." If that was full stop right there, that would be such a powerful statement of faith as it is. If that was the end of their sentence right there, it would have been so inspiring already. The God that we serve is able. You say, which God? We'll show you which God. Which God can save me from you, King Nebuchadnezzar? King, you think you're really strong. I've got news for you. Which God can, if they just stopped right there, that would be phenomenal. That for me would be so inspirational. I would read that regularly just to encourage. If I'm faced with death, and am I going to take the way of the world? Because you know, never, David writes, never have I seen the righteous forsaken. It's interesting, he doesn't write, never have I seen the righteous forsaken. It's amazing how as we go through life, how we forsake the God we serve. How it's easier to say, oh, that fire looks really bad. Okay, I'll bow down. That fire, just a couple of bows to statue. I mean, what is that anyway? It's a dead statue. And it's going to keep me alive. My friends don't really like it when I do that. My friends don't want to hear that. My parents, they don't. I mustn't tell my parents, I can't get baptized, because why would I want to follow Jesus if my parents say I mustn't get baptized? And it's amazing how we drawn to doing the things that are comfortable and easy. And here are these three guys, and they say, our God is able to save us, King. We are not afraid. We will choose to follow him. But I love this next phrase, perhaps even more than the first part of what they say. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us. But even if he doesn't. But even if he doesn't, we want to make it clear to you, your majesty, at least I remain respectful throughout this whole process, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue you have set up. That for me is so inspiring. That Jesus, I will serve you in the midst of my marriage that's falling apart. My marriage isn't falling apart. If I were, I will serve you, and I believe that you are able to save this. But even if you don't, I'm not going to worship anyone else. I'm going to serve you, Jesus, and you are able to save little Azael's life. But even if you don't, which is what his dad said to me yesterday, but even if he doesn't, God, you're able to provide a job for me, but even if you don't. God, you're able to move on my dad's life, but even if you don't. God, you're able to restore, you're able to make whole. But you know what? Even God, if you don't. Do you know what makes that so powerful? That for me is a dividing line where am I serving God? Am I really serving God, or have I created a God who I want to serve me? And I will serve him as long as he's serving me. So actually, he's just serving me. If the moment he stops serving me, doing what I think should be done, then I'm not serving him anymore. They're not putting ultimatums down. It's amazing how often we put on ultimatums to God. God, if you will, then I will. God, if you will help me get through this exam, then I'll give my first paycheck to you. God, if you will help me get this girl or get this guy. God, if you will. Rob was praying a prayer like that in this week, apparently. But now he's sitting alone, and I'm still trying to figure this out. But Sorry, Rob, I couldn't miss that. It's amazing how we put these ultimatums before God and we're like, God, if you will, then I will. God, if you come through to me, then I'll commit my life to you. God, if you come through to me, then I'll follow you. And yet there are three guys who are saying, God, even if you don't come through in the way we think you should come through, it's not going to change anything because we're not serving you because of what you do for us. We're serving you because you are the God. We can't bow down before any other idol. We can't bow down before this Nebuchadnezzar because he's not God. And even if we wanted to bow down before him, we'd just be lying to ourselves if we did that because we know he's not God. It's a little bit like Peter. At one stage, the disciples, as they're following Jesus says some things that wasn't nice to hear for a bunch of people because, you know, Jesus does that. Jesus doesn't only come and give us nice fluffy hugs and make us feel warm. Sometimes he steps into our life and he says, things in your heart needs to change. Cannot carry on doing that. And he brings this hard word and a whole bunch of people leave. And Jesus turns to these 12 people who've been sticking with him all along and he says, are you guys going to leave as well? I love their response, or Peter's response. Peter looks at him and says, but where else will we go? You alone have the words of eternal life. Whether we like your words or not is the implication. They are the words of eternal life. And we need to make peace with that, that they're your words. And there are these three guys. They're looking at the king. The king has said, I'm going to give you another chance. They're like, king, we don't want another chance. We're not going to change our mind. You want to know who can save us? We'll tell you who can save us. Our God can save us. But king, we want you to know that even if he doesn't save us, that doesn't change anything about the way that we worship him. The story carries on. So Nebuchadnezzar was furious, as you can imagine a self-righteous king would be when people tell him, you want to know which God? We'll show you which God. He gets angry. He gets so furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that his face became distorted with rage. He commanded that the furnace be heated 7 times hotter than usual. Then he ordered some of the strongest men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So they tied them up and threw them into the furnace, fully dressed in their pants, turbans, robes, and their other garments. And because the king, in his anger, had demanded such a hot fire in the furnace, the flames killed the soldiers as they threw the three men in. This is a hot fire. The guys who just coming a bit too close, they're the guys who are throwing Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fire. They dropping down dead from the burn wounds. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, securely tied, fell into the roaring flames. Not in a good spot. And then, words which I love in Scripture. But, in this case, but suddenly. Often it's, but God. There's two of my favorite words in all of Scripture. I want to encourage you, whenever you're reading a passage and kind of it ends on a bit of a low note, just see if the next word isn't, but God. Then don't stop reading. Because those but God moments are the moments that transform our lives. You see, the doctor walked to my brother and to my mom and said, sorry, ma'am, your son is a quadriplegic for the rest of his life and he would have been, but God. We still got the x-rays. His neck was broken. He's not meant to be able to walk. But God. And here's a moment exactly like the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're falling down. They're lying in the bottom of this pit. It's crazy hot down there. But watch what happens. Suddenly, Nebuchadnezzar jumped up in amazement. You know, sometimes when God moves in our lives, it's suddenly. It's like this big build up of darkness, of despair, of confusion. And then suddenly that moment comes. And suddenly Nebuchadnezzar jumps up in amazement and he exclaimed to his advisors, didn't we tie up three men and throw them into the furnace? So he's got like a window. He's looking into this thing. He can see what's going on the inside of the fire there. It's like his entertainment for the day. Yes, your majesty, we certainly did. And they made sure they said yes, because otherwise they would have been in the fire as well. Look, Nebuchadnezzar shouted. I see four men unbound, walking around in the fire, unharmed. And the fourth looks like a god. You see, here is this king, and he's looking at the situation. Three men tied up, can't move, thrown in. He looks in, and he sees four people walking around, untied, unbound. And the fourth doesn't look like a human, because the fourth isn't a human. You see, the fourth one, as he's looking into that, he realizes what is happening there is something, a big theological word for it is a theophany or a Christophany. It is Jesus himself appearing before he came in the New Testament. Jesus himself is right there in the pit of fire with these three guys. They're looking around. They've got their clothes on, but they were bound and that stuff's all loose. And they're walking around in the midst of the fire. I love that, that wherever you find yourself, my friends, in this week for me are such an encouragement in this dark, deep, confusing moment. And for anyone who's ever been in that situation, you'd know the uncertainty is probably the biggest problem. The not knowing if it's going to be okay. You know, if someone could walk up and say, listen, it's going to take 6 months to get your kid out of this hospital, but he is going to be okay. I guarantee you that. You know, that's okay. You can live with that. It's hard. It's difficult, but it's there. We don't know if he's still going to be breathing tomorrow. That makes it hard. That which way are we going with this? But in the midst of all of that, the realization that as we're sitting next to our kid's bed right here, yes, it's the husband and the wife, but we are not alone. There is somebody here with me. There is a fourth man in the burning fiery furnace. And I don't know which burning fiery furnace you may be in right now, or you may find yourself in times to come, but I hope and pray that you will never forget this, that there is a fourth man in the burning fiery furnace with you. There is a fourth man who has unbound them, and they're walking around, and guess what? They are okay. Should they be okay? No. Is everyone around them okay? No, everyone else around them has died. The guys who got close got burned, but somehow, some way, in the midst of the burning, fiery furnace, these three guys are okay because there is a fourth man. And the fourth man does not look like a human. He is different. He is not normal. Not like a brother is not normal. He is not normal because he is the living God himself who cares about every detail of your life, who is there in the midst of your deepest, darkest moment, who is there in the midst of your highest moment that you can possibly find yourself in. And you know, the thing that you and I just need to learn to do is to open our eyes to see it. But as cool as that story is, it's not finished yet. So Nebuchadnezzar, he's like amazed. He's jumping up. He's like, there are four guys in there. We threw in three and they were tied, and now they're four and they're not tied. And the fourth one, he's like different, which is really weird. Then Nebuchadnezzar came as close as he could to the door of the flaming furnace. And he shouted, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Watch these words. Servants of the Most High God. See, something happens when God comes through on our behalf. The people around us realize that there's a God who lives. The people around us, the people who are destined our destruction, they look at this and they say, this is not normal. You should have been destroyed. You should have been destroyed. Servants of the Most High God. What is he saying? Maybe I'm not the Most High God that I thought I was. Guys, guess what? It's okay if you don't bow down before me because you're bowing down before someone else who I'm also going to bow down to. So that's really cool. Come out. Come here. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego stepped up out of the fire. Then the high officers, the officials, the governors, and the advisors crowded them and saw that the fire had not touched them. Not a hair on their heads was singed, and their clothing was not scorched. They didn't even smell of smoke. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, praise to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He sent his angel to rescue his servants who trusted in him. They defied the king's command and were willing to die rather than serve or worship any God except their own God. he realizes that he tested them. They were literally willing to die. You know what comes out of that? He realizes, do you remember the taunt that he gave them? Which God can save you from me? That question was answered. And watch what it carries on from here. Therefore, I make this decree, which I'm not quite sure. My Old Testament theology, I'm growing in that. But I'm not quite 100% sure that Jesus would approve of this decree. But nevertheless, this is the decree that gets made. Therefore, I make this decree. If any people, whatever their race or nation or language, speak a word against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they will be torn limb from limb, and their houses will be turned into heaps of rubble. I'm not sure Jesus quite approves what Nebuchadnezzar is doing here. He's obviously a guy who is given to extremes. But you know what he realizes? He realizes that there is a God who is alive. And nobody, as long as he is king, will ever say anything bad about that God. Maybe the way kind of he implemented it needs a bit of help. There is no other God who can rescue like this. There is no other God who can rescue like this. Never ever forget. Never forget when you find yourself. And I hope and pray, and I honestly do, I'm just using it by figure of speech. When you find yourself looking at your child floating in a swimming pool, that there is no other God who can rescue like this. When you find yourself, when that moment where your heart sinks to your feet, where you're sitting next to the bed and the doctor comes with the really, really bad news. Perhaps when you've given it your everything and the exam results come and they were not what you expected. When the boss calls you into the office and the discussion doesn't go the way that you wanted. Never, ever forget that there is no other God who can rescue like this. And then just because God can and he likes showing off, then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to even higher positions in the province of Babylon. I love how God does that just to rub in a little bit of extra salt in the wounds of those who wanted to destroy them. Can you imagine those guys who came and complained to Nebuchadnezzar about these three men who are not bowing down when the music plays? They're not bowing down. Everyone else is except these three guys. Let's just kill these guys because we don't like them anyway. And the next day they go to work and guess who's been promoted? That's got to feel good, doesn't it? Just in a little bit of a way. Because God cares about every detail of our lives. I have been young and now I am old, but never have I seen the godly abandoned, David writes. I want us to read the last couple of verses from that same chapter we read earlier, Psalm 37. It's not on the screen, so you're going to have to listen to me for the last few moments. Look at those who are honest and good, for a wonderful future awaits those who love peace, but the rebellious will be destroyed. They have no future. The Lord rescues the godly. He is their fortress in times of trouble. The Lord helps them, rescuing them from the wicked. He saves them, and they find shelter in him. He rescues them, and they find shelter in him.
Thanks for listening to this message from Shofar Christian Church. We believe that you enjoyed your time with us, establishing God's kingdom and his glory in your life. For more info, call us on 012-362-1363, email us pretoria@shofaronline.org, browse our website www.shofaronline.org, or like us on facebook.com/shofarpretoria.